Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Barf on a Podcast, episode 173, a Mystical Opinions brought to you by the most influential voices in the SC Barcelona community. Hi, I'm Dan Hilton, he's Frances Tomas, and it may be a new year. Happy 2020, all you culés, but the same old Barcelona, isn't it, Frances?
It seems to be the same. Unfortunately, we still have Valverde as a coach. Unfortunately, the board is still sort of run by the same people. Hopefully, we don't have many more months or I think it's going to be years until this is changed. But we've got a whole decade ahead of us. Let's be optimistic and hopefully pray for some changes.
Well, while Barcelona has started the decade on the wrong foot, we'll say, here at the Barcelona Podcast, I just want to lift up the hood just for a second here. This is our very first show on Blue Wire Network. And while you won't hear the ads this week, usually... Again, this is just for all you listeners who've been with us. You've noticed that we had ads at the beginning and end of our show. It wasn't my voice, but now with our move to Blue Wire Network, you're going to be hearing some live ad reads. Not this week, but in the forthcoming weeks. And we also have some big, not changes, but additions and improvements to be made to the YouTube channel, to the website, barcablog.com, where you find a lot more content there. Also, if you're using the One Football app, you can find all of our articles and you can watch either the YouTube videos and find the podcast on the One Football app as well. So a lot of different moving parts going on, a lot of exciting things for the Barcelona Podcast. And I think a good way to give back, Frances, is it's been a few weeks since we had a listener show. So I guess that's what we're going to be doing today, right?
Let's have a listener show. We love our listeners. They are very active on the Facebook group, and that's where we get the questions from. So, yeah, let's do it. Can't wait to start.
So here we go. For La Ronda, our very first question, who should Barcelona buy, sell, and loan this winter? And, Frances, we're going to do a truncated version of this question. While we could go dive in deep on some of the transfer targets and all these things, I think we're just going to do a broad stroke, a quick brush over, because we have a lot of listener questions. So, as far as Barcelona buying, selling, and loaning this winter, I actually want to pose to you the answer that I don't really think they should necessarily buy anyone. As much as it seems like somebody needs to be bought, I don't think buying is the right idea. However, with Carlos Alenia already to Real Betis, he made his debut against Alaves, and we've heard about Todibo as well being another guy that could be on the move. I just think Barcelona have to mitigate the number of players they sell. And obviously Arturo Vidal has been the major headline story about whether or not he's going to go to Inter Milan. And every day you hear something new. You hear that he's going to be staying, he's going to be leaving, he's suing the club. And really it's the transfer saga here in the January window involves Arturo Vidal and exodus from the club, not necessarily entering the club.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of buy-in, I agree with you. In terms of buy-in, I think, unless you can gather some money and go for Mbappé, I don't think anyone else is really worth it. I know that we've been talking about Neymar for many years, but at the price that they're asking, and you know, both of these players are from PSG, who are definitely not a selling club. So beyond that, I don't really think that we've got any solutions anywhere else but where we are today, especially when you're now in January. Arturo Vidal obviously scored over the weekend against Espanyol in the Catalan Derby, which is good. But, there's also been news about him claiming 2.4 million euros from Barca while playing for Barca, which to me is absolutely nonsensical. I don't think that makes any sense whatsoever, especially guys that seem to be right. And that's why the La Liga directors have been saying from, you know, from the offices in Madrid. They've actually taken his complaint away. But I think that it all comes back to this board. I mean, the club is just accepting some nonsensical stuff, left, right, and center. You know, the value is going down the drain because, you know, chasing Griezmann after he did what he used to do, being sued by Neymar, and then still saying, well, you know, if we get you back, then can you drop this claim you've got against us in the, you know, in the courts? Then Arturo Vidal being one of our players doing this. It's just, you know, I tend to refer it as popcorn. It's just, you just put some corn and you put the heating on, and then the whole popcorn goes all sorts of places, and you can't really control it. That seems to be what the institution is at this moment in time. I mean, luckily, results are not being horrendous in terms of, especially in La Liga, and we are going to the next round in the Champions League, and, you know, see what happens there when we play the Italians. But institutionally, it's just becoming, in a way, unrecognizable and ultimately a joke.
Well, I would also say, too, with the January window and the transfers, as always is the case, take everything with a grain of salt, but the Arturo Vidal situation, as you mentioned, seems to be very real, and it is definitely something that the club shouldn't be necessarily happy about, and it's not a good look for the club either. Now, when it comes to some of the other rumors that you've heard, I think there is actually a lack of rumors for this January window, which is a good thing. I think the club, not that they should be standing pat, but I think the business to be done over the summer could be a good vision. The big news that's coming out as far as like the transfers, and this could have to do with different and contract extensions for these players. So this might even be agent driven, though Ricardo Pereira, the 26-year-old right back at Leicester City, was rumored. He's valued at 50 million euros, which is puzzling. He also has a contract at Leicester for till 2023. So again, that isn't necessarily him. Maybe he's just looking for a wage raise, and that's why his agent's trying to link him with Barcelona. And Lukas Klostermann, the right back from RB Leipzig in Germany, they're currently leading, however, in the Bundesliga, a 23-year-old, but he's also, both those guys are pretty tall for right backs, and they would be coming in to replace Nelson Semedo in the summer. So this is even a long-term solution. What's so puzzling about that is that Barcelona have a buy or purchase option over the summer for Emerson, who for Real Betis has scored 3 goals and 4 assists. He's been one of the best right backs in all of the league, and he's only 21. So for Barcelona to get that player much cheaper, and a player that still has, I'd say, a lot more room to grow than 26-year-old Pereira or Klostermann, that's a puzzling rumor to me, and I'm hoping that the deal is just for Barcelona, they should already be tracking out, and January should be used to lay down the groundwork for what the summer should be. Now, of course, paying for Neymar in the summer means almost none of the other deals are possible. We don't need to go ahead, rehash that again. But for me, almost a perfect summer would be Lautaro Martinez coming from Inter Milan. I mean, yes, for 13 goals, 33 assists already. So he's a buy in the summer. We know that Pedri is on his way from Las Palmas, and I think he's been so good for Las Palmas this year that whether or not he's in the B team, I think he's going to be one of those guys that should be in between. I think he's good enough to make first team appearances a few next year, not necessarily be a consistent contributor, but I think he's on his way certainly next season to be a contributor at what he'll be 18 in next November. And then the final piece of that puzzle, I think, once you've added Lautaro Martinez and Emerson, I think the only deal really that should be done here in January is Dani Olmo from, and we're going to have questions about him later, so we'll talk about him as a player, but Dani Olmo from Dinamo Zagreb, 8 goals, 7 assists already, and yes, obviously he's playing in Croatia, but he is in the Champions League as well, where he's put up some stats. He has had some good games against Shakhtar Donetsk and Man City, just to name a few. I think they should buy Dani Olmo now from Zagreb because he wants to come, because he wants to play at a higher profile club than Zagreb to get a spot at the Euro 2020 with Spain. So you buy him now, and if it doesn't seem like Ernesto Valverde is going to use him or have him contribute, which it doesn't seem like he uses young attacking midfielders very often, that being Valverde, then you loan him to a top five league club right away for the betterment of the player. So you buy him for the 30 to 40 million, which I not only do I think he's worth, but I think it's actually a good deal for a player like him of what he's already shown. And then you loan him immediately out to, now obviously not a team like Napoli because they're playing against you in the Champions League, but along that ilk, you find a club that suits him, whether it's maybe in the Premier League even, maybe a Watford that are looking for some kind of attacking midfielder in the Premier League or what have you. Anyway, so Dani Olmo for me, coupled with Emerson at right back, if they're going to sell Nelson Semedo and Lautaro Martinez to replace a number 9. This is no offense to Neymar, but he's going to cost everything in the kitchen sink. So why not just begin your business now of what you're going to do in the summer, fortify in the summer, and just survive and get a A+ for that transfer window. So that starts in January, because as we say, Frances, what, 98% of January deals aren't really great deals?
Apart from Prince Boateng, which obviously has been a world-class star for
yeah,
us and
right.
made that club so much better. We cannot forget the legend there. Cannot really disagree with much of what you're saying in terms of buy-in, but as I tend to say pretty much every week, I don't think that unless you're going to buy a starter, which out of the ones you mentioned, Lautaro would be, Mbappe would be, I think Neymar would be as well. I don't think any of the others you mentioned would be a starter at all. So I don't think that that's the model of club we should be going for. We should be going for internal promotion in terms of promoting Ricky Puig. And, you know, you're not going to get, if say they end up selling Semedo, who I don't think should be sold at all, because he's definitely with Sergio Roberto, that position is covered to a great standard. Obviously, it's not Dani Alves standard. He's not even Jordi Alba standard. But I think it's more than decent. And I don't think that's an area that we should reinforce and invest heavily on. And, you know, I think Dani Olmo and the other ones you've mentioned, they wouldn't be starters. So for me, they should basically just stay where they are. And people from La Masia be promoted. Now, another point where I'm saying, especially about Olmo, Carlos Alagna had a clause to leave in terms of not leaving the club, but go on loan, and was convinced against it by Valverde in the summer, saying, you know, you're going to be trusted, you know, things are changing. I know you had a season at Barça B last year. You're going to be really important. And then we all know what happened. He played half a game in Bilbao and then disappeared for what seemed like an eternity. I don't know if it was 10 or 15 weeks, something like that, something stupid like that. And then once the transfer window for now started coming up, then he started featuring again as if it was a miracle. And, you know, the clause is unilateral, meaning that Alagna could just decide with no impediments to just leave the club. And he's fought very hard and sort of ignored everyone in the club in terms of you know, the board, but especially Valverde's promises, and said, no, actually, I'm going to go to Betis. I know that Marc Bartra is very happy there. I know that Cristian Tello is really happy there, featuring pretty much in every game. And as we say in Spanish, matándola, killing it. And that's what I want for my career. If I was Dani Olmo with Valverde as a manager, I wouldn't come back to Barca. I would just stay where I am, or I would go into a sort of next tier club, any of the Premiership clubs, maybe someone like, I don't know, Juventus or Inter or something along those lines. Maybe Juventus a bit higher, but you know what I mean. And just continue to develop, because honestly, I think if Dani Olmo, as great as he's been for Dinamo so far, he would not be a starter for us. He would find himself behind, you know, 97-year-old Rakitic, who we have seen that even though he's been influential, don't want to be too ungrateful here, but he just cannot give what a team that is aspiring to win the Champions League can give. And Arturo Vidal, yes, of course, he's scoring here and there. But, you know, this is 6 goals, which for a midfielder at Barca is a lot. But in the larger scheme of things, I don't think he contributes enough in terms of build-up, in terms of control of the games. Sure, the guy is aggressive. Sure, the guy can run into spaces and score goals here and there. But I don't think that's what a Barca midfield should be. If you want to use him as he has been used as a last 20, 30-minute weapon, then fair enough. But we need to find someone who can start in midfield. And I'm not saying Dani Olmo could not be a starter, the same way I'm not saying Alagna could not be a starter. But I don't think that either one of those would be trusted by our current manager, which is why it's pretty obvious where the changes need to be.
Yeah, it's odd. I think we agree and disagree. And this is actually perfect. We're going to transition to some listener questions here. But Papa and Pancho both asked about Dani Olmo and whether or not, what are his chances of signing, and then what are the chances that he would, or how would he fare in the team? And I think where I do agree with you is that Valverde would not use him in the way that he probably should be used and what is best for his development. He can play as both a winger and as a central midfielder, and both of those spots he could possibly reinforce and help Barca. But all that said, I think you're, again, correct under the point that Olmo wouldn't be a good piece of business for Barca because he would wind up being a wasted talent again. But just because that's the case doesn't mean that he shouldn't, the club And the board should not have the understanding and the forward thinking to know that in the next 2 to 3 seasons, he's going to be a player that they're going to feel like they miss out on. And yes, he could go to another club, but then you buy him after that, sure. But the other thing I would say, too, is about promoting from within. That's the big worry here, right? That Todibo goes, and apparently he's going to be swapped with Alessio Romagnoli, who's a left-footed center back for AC Milan, but also their captain. So again, let's shoot that rumor to the sun. Now, Todibo could be going to AC Milan, and then there's no backup brought in. Maybe Ronald Araujo, who Ernesto Valverde has proved to like, would be the idea there. And the same thing, if Vidal winds up leaving in January, and you already sent Carlos Alagna out, and you're not going to buy anybody new, then where are you going to find another midfielder? Then Rakitic is going to be, Sergio Busquets, and Rakitic is going to play every 90 minutes, and De Jong, who's even serving a red card suspension now for the next one. So who's going to start in his place? The answer would be Ricky Puig, sure, great. But Valverde has not shown that he's going to be using the Barca B players and the La Masia players either. So what is it going to be? Is it going to be another Prince Boateng or Murillo kind of stopgap loan for a player that is secondary? Because you're right, they need to bring in a starter. That's what they would like to see. But in the same regard, I think Dani Olmo would have just as likely a place to start. If you're not bringing up Ricky Puig, then I say just go out and get the business for a player that you would trust a little more. But as far as a center midfielder who's going to come in and start right away in the January transfer window market, that's just not a thing. You know, you're not going to get a starting center midfielder for less than 120 million. And I haven't even heard many that apparently today Harry Winks for Tottenham is a guy that they're talking about. And yeah, yes, he plays for Tottenham, but he's a player that, you know, is being rumored for 80 to 100 million around there for other clubs. So that's what you get in January. You get inflated purchases. And even think about this window about Marc Cucurella, not to bring him back, but just to check in and recognize that he's another player on loan that Barca has that is one of Getafe's best players. And they've been a top half level team this season in the Liga. So just keep an eye on him and remember that he's another player that Barca could, in theory, be bringing back that could reinforce their squad when, in theory, a new coach is brought in to get a little younger. So I do want to go on the Valverde point though here, Frances, stick with that and speak about Juan's question. Can the board tell Valverde what lineup to play like it happens in American sports? Which that is, I disagree with that a little bit because with owner meddling, I think those are the worst kind of teams in the U.S. that have that, where they have an owner or a president that are taking a little bit too much license into the lineups. But the question being, does the board or Abidal or certain people, other than giving and taking away players, can the board or any of those officials force Valverde's hand into who he plays?
Well, can they? Yes, of course they can. I mean, they are running the club, so they can do whatever they want. Should they? Absolutely not, because they are not the experts, because they're not the ones running the sporting side of things, which obviously should be the manager. Are they? No idea, because, you know, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And if I was the manager and I was in charge of Barca and they would tell me what to do, I would walk out. So I think in a nutshell, that's the answer. I don't think there's much more to say.
No, I mean, I think the pressure is back up on Valverde. It seemed like it had gone down a bit, but questions from both Charlie Barca, hey Charlie, and Ted, why was Antoine Griezmann against Espanyol removed for Semedo instead of Suarez coming off for Semedo? And not only that, but Charlie makes the point that, yes, and then Charlie says he thinks that Pep would have done it, we're not sure, but the idea would have been for, a prototypical Barca manager to take off Suarez in that moment for Espanyol, when they were down a player but up a goal, and put Ansu Fati on and continue to put Espanyol on the back foot. That was the Barca ideal. But instead, it was fighting for a 2-1 victory that wound up not happening. And the guy who was tirelessly working in Griezmann with all that energy winds up coming off against Espanyol. Can you think of strategically any way to give the green light to why Valverde would have done that?
No, there's no way. I think 99.999% of the millions of people watching that game would have known that what the game needed is someone who can be mobile up front. You know, I think that either leaving Griezmann for longer or what you just said, just bring in either, it doesn't have to be Ansu Fati. I think Carlos Pérez would have been a good choice as well.
Yeah,
either player that would have upset something up front, someone who would have challenged, someone who would have run at defenders. And Suarez just definitely after 70, 80 minutes of play, he just cannot do that anymore. And but the thing is, I think Valverde is playing the long game, and also there's a shade of political sort of strategies going on, because say you don't take Suarez out, then you've kept him happy, haven't you? And also, I was reading the FC Barcelona social media earlier on today, and Suarez has been involved in all the last 10 games, all the last 10 goals that Barca have scored. I think it's in La Liga. I mean, you can go through the Barca social media looking for that, the official one. I think this is playing the political game, because the game, clearly, anyone who's played football or anyone who's watched football for more than 10 minutes understands that when you're playing against 10 men, you've got the upper hand. And when you've got the upper hand in the later part of the game, you need to be mobile, you need to run at people. And Valverde, for whatever reason, decided not to do it. And unfortunately, the reason seems to be political.
Yeah, and as far as it, we've talked about this many times over the course of this season, and we're going to do it in the next 6 months as well. But for Suarez, he's been involved in all those goals. And the question that I continue to ask is, if Griezmann was playing in that nine role, which again isn't completely natural for him, Suarez has proven to have still a lot to give. But if Griezmann's in those positions, does Barca, not only do they score the same number of goals, but do they score more goals? And it's the same question with Lenglet as a center back. And I've been critical of Lenglet this season. He has not been as good as he was last year. And if Umtiti is in that position, or even if Todibo had been in Gerard Piqué's position for a fourth of those starts, would Todibo have put in the same performance? Because he was fantastic against Inter Milan. And Samuel Umtiti, I think, has been just as good as Lenglet when he's seen the field this year, and he's been a little healthier. He's just kind of waiting on the bench. So it's not a knock on the players that are on the field, because they are, you know, helping Barca lead La Liga, tied on points with Real Madrid. They won their Champions League group, and they did the right things. But we're watching what's playing, and I mean, we're watching what's happening on the field. And as Antonio asks, how can we as Barca fans see our team moving forward to win any trophies this season with our last few displays? And do you think we can beat Atletico Madrid in the Super Cup and the Spanish Super Cup? Well, that's a twofold question. We'll answer number one first, in that Barca, clearly the way they're playing and the way they played against Espanyol and the way they've continue to go out with the same kind of almost getting over the line, just getting the victories, or having to do something great through the individual magic of Suarez or Messi, or we've seen Dembele, obviously, when he was healthy, just individual moments. And yet this Barcelona team doesn't seem to be able to create that distance between them and an opponent. And the answer, again, to me is, it's clearly that the players on the field are good enough, because they're world-class players, they've been world-class players, they're legends of the game. But would another player be doing just as well in those positions and in those circumstances? It's a hypothetical, obviously, and impossible to answer, but that seems to be the biggest issue with Valverde. It's not necessarily the team that he's picking, because those are great players, but it's that other players, I think there's really a growing belief in a fan base, and you see this is when managers leave. This is when there are issues between a fan base and a manager, and we continue to have issues with Valverde, because you wonder, why is there guys on the bench that you think could do the same job or a better job?
Yeah, I'm not going to add much more with that, just to say that there was a survey in Sport, which is obviously the biggest Catalan newspaper, together with Mundo Deportivo, but Sport is bigger. And 80% of voters, and these are culés, you know, they're not just, say, Marca, who is a sort of Hall of Spain, obviously Madrid bias, a bit of media. This is a Catalan media outlet doing a survey. 80% of people who voted wanted Valverde out now. And 80% is a really, really large number. And then yeah. I'm not going to go into question one, because you obviously answered it. Question two, Supercopa, not interested at all. Okay. I know that the format has changed. I know that they're playing with our neighbors here. I'm in Qatar, obviously. So they're in Saudi Arabia. I'm not interested. You know, I really am not. I'm sure that the media, who obviously have paid a lot of money for this competition to be aired and obviously to be hosted in Saudi, it's the Supercopa. It does not matter, okay? It probably will be sold as a, you know, clash of the titans, Madrid, Valencia, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, all involved, blah, blah, blah. It's the Super Cup. No one cares, all right? If fans want to go crazy over a game against Atletico Madrid that means nothing, then so be it. But ultimately, in the larger scheme of things, it means absolutely nothing. It has never meant anything. I know the Spanish Federation are trying to revamp it. They changed the dates. They put it now. And they're trying to sort of give it all the glamour, etc. But it's the Super Cup. It's not important.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the most important thing about the Spanish Super Cup for our listeners is actually to head over to the YouTube channel, because you'll already find up there a history of the Spanish Super Cup? And the answer is that clubs tend to care about it with the lineups they put out. But in the same way, in Spain, it is clearly the trophy that is number four in everybody's trophy cabinet. And that's and arguably, if a Spanish team wins the Champions League the first year, then the FIFA Club World Cup is seen as more important than even the Spanish Super Cup. So head over to the YouTube channel, watch the video, and maybe watch the video and not even watch the matches. You're right, Frances. That's how little the Spanish Super Cup does matter. But so it's got a little bit of an interesting history of the Spanish Super Cup. But other than that, you're absolutely right. I don't like the trip to Saudi Arabia. Why is a competition that is contested with just Spanish teams happening somewhere else? Well, the answer, I'm just going to leave it with money. That's what it comes down to. Why are there now four different teams instead of just the La Liga winners and the Copa del Rey winners? And obviously, when those are the same, that you have the tie breaks and all that. But why is it just four teams now instead of two? Well, money is the answer to that. So before we get a little too cynical about the Spanish Super Cup, let's head on to another question coming from Cole. We are at the midway point in the season. Who would you two have starting the Champions League final tomorrow against Liverpool? Cole, I'll start by saying we have to get there first. But the question would be for Frances would be, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's almost two different players. Who would I have starting, and who is Valverde going to start? Are the two? I mean, does it really matter who I think is going to start or who I think Valverde would put on the field?
Well, we can answer both. I mean, personally, I would start Ter Stegen. Then I would have Sergio Roberto and Jordi Alba, Piqué and Lenglet in the middle. Obviously, now that Alain has gone, I would have to go for Busquets as a holding. I would have Frenkie. I would have Arthur. Obviously, he's not Arthur, Artur. That's his name. Mm-hmm. Even though that the spelling is a TH in English, it's Artur. Obviously, he's not healthy, but he will be my starter there. And then up front, for a game that important, I will have Suarez as the striker. I will have Messi, and I will have Dembele on the other side. But obviously, some of the people that I mentioned are not healthy. And in terms of Suarez, he wouldn't be able to play the 90 minutes. So on the 60th, he comes off, Griezmann comes in.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I know you have your midfield to go, but I agree with that front three. I'm going to jump in there that I think against a team like Liverpool and against these top-level opponents, they will destroy you if you do not use width. And that's going to be the biggest problem moving forward against tougher competition, even like against the Napoli in the next round of the Champions League. If they do not use width properly, and we do speak about Dembele because he's been in those situations, and you can go back and say, oh, he missed that. What could have been the deciding goal against Liverpool? But you know what? As I said, that night against Liverpool, they would have scored five. So I don't put that on Dembele, even though it always comes up and we remember it. But against Liverpool again, I think Dembele is the player to add width. And if Dembele is injured, then you know what? As I've said, the managers for Barcelona that do the best are the ones that are brave. That is historically how it works. So if that were the case, I agree with Frances. I think Luis Suarez would be the starter next to Messi. But you get brave and you start Ansu Fati then if it's not Dembele. And you add width against those best teams because that's what you have to do. And then again, with the back line, I would just change up Umtiti against Lenglet because again, I think Lenglet just doesn't have the pace. And Piqué is in top form. If Piqué is out of form, then obviously put him on the bench. But no, I think Lenglet has just not had his best this year, and I would put Umtiti for his pace in his position. And then I agree, Roberto on the one side, who always plays well against big opponents, Jordi Alba on the other side, and I guess Marc-Andre Ter Stegen in goal. But yeah, let's hash out that midfield then. You said you wanted De Jong, Busquets, and Arthur. I can't see I can disagree much, Frances.
No. I think that if everyone's healthy, that has to be the three at this moment in time with Alain gone.
And my worry is, I mean, Arturo Vidal comes on and starts, but I was thinking, as a question from Arturo comes, what was the main factor behind Barca not getting a win against Espanyol? Well, I think the answer to that is that when two of the better players on the field are Luis Suarez and Arturo Vidal, they're the ones who play best against that kind of derby where teams don't want to play. And it does create kind of an answer to me that against Espanyol, who didn't really want to play in that match, right? They had, at one point in the first half, they had 17% possession. They were just going to try to get a counter-attacking goal. They were going to be hacking everybody, fouling everyone. That's what a derby Barcelona is. In the same regard, the Barcelona B team who I watched that day with Puig and Callado, those two were very good in that match as well. They were, and Álvaro Ruiz actually got a rare start and played well in that match because they were working harder and they were forcing Espanyol B to play. They were making them play football. And they wound up winning 2-0. Ronald Araujo was good in that game as well. Basically a counterbalance to what Piqué was against Espanyol. I thought he was decent in the first half, at least, against Espanyol. But Barcelona's first team, as much as Espanyol had a great defensive shape, sure, credit to Abelardo, they did not pull them out, and they did not have any width, and they did not force them to play football. That being Espanyol, they just let it be a rugby match. And when Barca are willing to do that, then if Arturo Vidal and Suarez and the other guys that are going to punch you in the mouth, if they're not the ones who win those kind of matches, then Barcelona aren't going to get a result. And so that was my main factor against Espanyol, was that it seemed like Espanyol wanted it more than Barca. And Barca's, when Messi doesn't have his magic on a day and when things just aren't vibing and working out, then yeah, you want the Chilean and Luis Suarez to get you a result. And I think that winds up being a huge, huge problem for the team.
Yeah, you said it there. I think it looked like Espanyol wanted it more because they actually did want it more. And it comes down to that. And when you've got a manager who's not able to motivate the players, and, you know, I have seen people saying, oh, but the players should be able to motivate themselves. I'm sorry, but I do get the element of that, and you should be a professional. But when you're playing, 50 matches a game, 50 matches a season, it's hard to keep track of your own motivation, and it's hard to sort of get yourself geared up. And that's why the managers are there. I mean, if you're going to put everything on the players being sort of self-accountable for their own motivation and to be 100% every single game, then don't get a manager. You know, get a cleaner, get someone who can, you know, fan air on their faces. But that's not professional football. It's the same. It's not professional any sport. And you need someone who can inspire. You need someone who can lead. And you need someone who can be relied upon to get the best out of people. And that's how it works.
Right. It's almost like we want to bring Pinto back to be the manager and just have him play EDM music in the
He's
clubhouse.
He's too busy.
I know he is.
Have you heard his song, Dan? Have you heard this song?
Yes, I have. Somebody sent it to me. Yes.
You have. It's so Salta la Comba. It's just weird.
So,
but he's happy.
But is that what is that what the locker room needs, right? Is the locker room at this point, I mean, they're at the point that they're at in their careers with so many of them, with Los Amigos, do they just need somebody to try to rile them up and get them excited? Or do they actually need somebody to manage them? Because, I mean, I think that's what Valverde is supposed to be, right? He's supposed to just be a man manager and not even a tactician, right? He's not a master tactician. A lot of times we've said that he's been outmanaged in major games as he was in numerous times already in his career, and surprisingly against Levante, he gets outmanaged as well. But yeah, it's a confusing thing that if he's not a man manager at the moment, because he's really allowing these players to dictate their playing time and dictate what happens on the field, and he's not really a master tactician, then it does leave you the question of, you know, what really is Ernesto Valverde at the moment. And again, I think it's a disservice to him as well, because if Ernesto Valverde was Barca's manager during the Rijkaard era, I think based on the players that the club had at the time, obviously a new generation was ushered in, but I think Valverde with that squad in that time and that era of football winds up being a really great manager for Barca. It's this weird thing where I think we're going to timestamp this and say, what was Barca at this moment in 2019 and 2020 and 2018, and what was Valverde to that team? And that's a worrying thing to me, that I think he just wound up being the wrong manager for the wrong era for Barca. And as we mentioned time and time again, this is just an older team that this was the wrong manager to try to do. I mean, he was never going to do this youth movement as much as we believed it to be. It is this weird thing where we're starting the new year, we're starting 2020, and yet we're still waiting to close this chapter. Not on the older players, because I think Messi still has a few years left. Busquets has, as I mentioned, a few years left. Alba, Piqué, and Suarez, I think, are closer to having one foot out the door. But all of that said, we're waiting for that youth movement. We're waiting until that next coach really does shake things up and has the courage and bravery to say to certain of those Los Amigos and go, Jordi Alba, I think, is the incumbent starter. Obviously, he's been leagues ahead of Junior Firpo, but let's say Jordi Alba, and I'm using him as an example because he's probably the least, other than Messi, he has his spot quite safe in the squad for the next 2 or 3 years. But what happens when Alba completely falls out of form next season? Valverde wouldn't be the manager to have the bravery to take him out of the lineup and even try something different. So who's going to be the manager that does that? And that's going to be next year's manager. So I think it seems we're still on this treadmill, Frances, this season, and we're going to be on it throughout the rest of the year. So we're going to have to almost find new things to talk about, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is, with all of that being said, Barca still have a chance to win every competition, you know, because mathematically we're in there. We are definitely not spectacular in any way, shape, or form. Like, I was watching the game against Espanyol, and honestly, I couldn't see much difference between one side and the other. Barca have become very, very average, and they play in an average sort of mid-table, unambitious, and attractive way. Fortunately, we've got Messi, we've got people like Suarez, people like Griezmann, people who can score goals here and there. It's just so, so boring. If you think about where we were in 2009, we had an inspiring manager who had players coming through. We had a board that was prepared to invest very heavily, as I said at the start, very heavily on those players who were actually going to make a difference. They were also prepared to spend on sort of non-regular starters if need be, but there was a manager and there was a structure of people, like in terms of coaching structure throughout, not just Barca first team, but throughout the whole of La Masia and obviously Barca B, that were scouting, they're promoting, and they were sort of broadcasting and speaking to the right channels in order to get people promoted. Because do you think now, if Lionel Messi at 16 years old comes through La Masia today, you think Valverde starts him? Like, say, Van Gaal and Rijkaard were doing? Obviously not Van Gaal himself, because that was through training. But he just doesn't get a look in. He just doesn't get a look in. And if you think about, say, obviously, don't want to compare them too much, but Ansu Fati. Ansu Fati is playing next to nothing. And when Messi was starting, he was starting to sort of show his face in the first team. He wasn't starting every game, but because it was Ludovic Juli was starting at the time. But he had 30, 35, 25, 35, 40 minutes every single match. Mm-hmm. You know, Messi was featuring every week, and that's not happening. So if Messi was starting from Barca B to the first team now, he would not be playing the way that he was playing, and his progress would have been stalled.
Yeah. I agree with all that, and I think that's a good place to leave it. Again, we started the season on this new year, not on a negative note, but I think when the team is on a negative note, I think we are too. And we're getting a draw against the bottom team in the Liga is certainly not going to lead to a positive show afterwards. But Francesco, as I said, there's so many big things coming. I think hopefully for the team in the new year, they're still alive and everything and doing well in every competition. But in the same regard, I think there are also some huge things for the podcast and the YouTube channel. I know for those who are paying attention to the YouTube channel, you haven't seen my face in a while, and that's because I had mentioned that I did move just down the road. But anyway, we're building something in the basement of our new place, and things are going to be looking good. And that'll be an exciting thing to see when you see my shining, smiling face again once on the YouTube channel. And
you got a beautiful face, Dan.
Oh, thank you, Francis. So we're gonna keep moving forward with that. Again, we also want to say we're really excited that we joined the Blue Wire Network for the new year, and that'll just help with our ads as well. And so you're actually going to hear us on live ad reads as opposed to going back to the, we'll just say those big commercials that you've heard in the past. So that'll be an exciting thing as well. We're also still obviously on Patreon at tbpod.link/Patreon. That's where I do the quick take match review. So they're the people that have helped for the last 3 years make all this possible. So not only thank you to them to start 2020, but that's also where you can get additional content. I also do a Friday spot in the UK on Love Sport Radio. That's also and exclusively on the Patreon page, unless you're hearing it live in the UK. And then finally, we also have the no ad
version.
Dan. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, just to say there. Over the Christmas break, I actually got a chance to listen to that show through the Patreon as well. And it was really, really good. It's a Clásico, isn't it? It's a Clásico show. And yes. There is someone talking about Madrid who we don't really care about. And there was you by yourself. So I think that is very... It was like a live interview. Like, obviously, you're the Barca expert. And it was really dynamic, and I really do think that our listeners would definitely enjoy that. So that's accessible through our Patreon.
Yep, as well as if you just want to be listening to this show for free and you want to just follow us on social media, that's the easiest thing you can do as well. We're on Twitter, at the Barcelona Pod, at HiltonD13 for me, on Instagram, at the Barcelona Pod. And obviously, I've already plugged the YouTube channel. We've got some cool stuff that is up there if you missed it over the holiday break. At the end of last season, I did a La Masia, you know, basically rising stars, the best players from La Masia in 2019 last season, and that included Ansu Fati, so I'm going to pat myself and pat Navid on the back for that, as well as Ricky Puig was featured in that piece, and now I had four new names and one repeat from that last list for January that we just did for the first half of this season. That is up on the YouTube page, as well as what is the Spanish Super Cup history that I already mentioned in this show. And I have some transfer work, and I obviously know it can get clickbaity, But as far as the potential transfers for FC Barcelona in the January window, it's a little bit of what we talked about, but I'm working on something there. So that'll be something that'll go up on the YouTube channel in the forthcoming weeks in January, because again, it is still the January transfer window. So changes could be happening. By the time that you have this in your ears, there could be 90 new rumors. The only thing that I care about, Frances, is that you and I are still doing this show and Lionel Messi is still at Barcelona, at least until the end of, well, for a while.
Yeah, we don't know how long that would be for. My guess is a couple of years, but you know, hopefully I'm wrong.
Yep, and so we're just hoping that Barcelona are doing their due diligence in the January transfer window, and everything winds up hoping to have a bright future. So I think that'll wrap up this show. Thanks so much for listening, as always, and until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barca.
Forza!